Hello and welcome to the APR Podcast for the 21st of October, which is would-be Martin Gardner's birthday. So it was 6 weeks since the last one, and I wasn't involved with that, so I don't remember at all how to do with these things. But my name is Peter Ollett, and I'm joined by Christine Perfect.
Hello, Christine.
Good. So I'm having one of these days again where I've just spoken to Samuel Hansen for the MathLass podcast, and now I'm here doing this. And other than that, I'm packing a bag for a puzzle stall I'm going to run this week and all sorts of complicated things. What are you up to?
Me, I'm just chilling. Yeah. yeah, I got nothing on as usual.
Right. So since the 9th of September, what's the most read post on the site?
It's a thing I only posted at the start of this week, which went a bit mad. It's a really funny story. There's a guy called Nate Eldredge, and he has a script called MathGen, which can randomly produce maths papers that look semi-plausible. So he's been using that for a while, and he's always had a little thing on the page saying that, I'm sure if you submitted this to enough publishers, one of them would accept it. So it looks like that's happened. Professor Marcy Rathke of the University of Southern Northern Dakota has written a paper called Independent Negative Canonically Turing Arrows of Equations and Problems in Applied Formal PDE. And it was accepted for publication by the journal Advances in Pure Mathematics, which certainly sounds real to me. Sounds like a real journal to you, Peter?
It does indeed, yeah.
Yeah,
it
sounds very prestigious even. so this paper was generated by the script. It's complete nonsense. It's sort of hilariously nonsense. But all the non-mathematicians I've shown couldn't tell that it was nonsense.
Yeah, it's very pretty, isn't it? And it's got nice symbols in it, and it's all latex. And
yeah.
And it just looks, yeah, proper.
This journal is published by Scientific Research Publishing. And I had a little snoop around their site. And I think a lot of their journals don't have any issues and don't have any papers published. So you can read into that what you will.
Yes, it's very. You don't want to say anything too difficult, do you? But I noticed that on the blog post that Nate wrote about it, I think we can quote him without warning. He says, your inbox and or spam trap very likely contains useful information about their publications at this very moment.
Yeah, well, I'll just go for it. They're vanity publishers. They're not publishing science. They're just trying to make some money. The way they do that is they claim that they're gold open access, and that in order to defray their costs of publishing, the authors should pay, what is it, $500?
$500. So this is an interesting consequence of open access, isn't it? Because the idea is that universities will stop paying for journal subscriptions, they will start paying for publishing costs instead, and the net economics of it will all sort itself out. But the problem is at the moment that you're asking libraries to still pay the subscription costs and to start paying author contribution costs. But there are some, I mean, the one that Tim Gowers is involved in, what's that called?
Oh, no.
That very prestigious journal they're trying to set up. But they're trying to set up a sort of premium standard open access journal.
Yeah.
Is it like Annals of Mathematics or something? It's something sort of...
Annals of Mathematics is the old
one. Is the old one, oh, okay. Then I can't remember. But anyway, and that's... Although for the first few years they aren't asking you to pay, that ultimately is going to a paid model.
Yeah.
Assuming they can't come up with something better. Because basically somebody has to pay for all the copy editing and editorial stuff and all that, which is, you know, is useful and provides a service.
Yeah.
But people would just prefer that... well, I don't know. There are different ways of paying for that, aren't there? But anyway, so the idea that you might allow a author pays model as a legitimate thing, then opens up the possibility that you and I could set up a, you know, the aperiodical journal and start taking $500 an article from people
that's
without checking.
Actually, not a bad idea, Peter. I'll look into that for next time.
Very good, very good. So yeah, this is an interesting article. So the upshot of it is that there are some peer reviewers' comments pointing out a couple of minor niggles, but basically saying yes, we're happy to publish it if you address this, isn't it? And the author can't address the minor niggles because They're not minor, really. Like this result is stated without proof. We'd like to see a proof, please. And since this result is utter nonsense, it's very hard to prove it, and so forth. So I don't think the author's going to take it. I don't think Nate's going to take it any further. But he has essentially had an offer to publish this paper of utter nonsense. In the comments, Ed De Quincey. I was going to say, I don't know whether I should say his surname, but there is a link to his website, so that's okay. Says that this is better than SciGen, which only got a conference paper accepted, not a full paper. SciGen is actually the code on which MathGen is based, so they are, the two things are related. And Madeline Shepherd points to the SoCal affair, which was a there's a chap called Alan SoCal, a physics professor at New York University, who submitted an article to a journal called Social Text, a journal of postmodern culture studies. And it says, I'm reading Wikipedia, so you have to just trust me, trust that this is true. It says the submission was an experiment to test the journal's intellectual rigor, and specifically to investigate whether such a journal would, quote, publish an article liberally salted with nonsense if it A, sounded good, and B, flattered the editor's ideological preconceptions. So that's a similar thing, but slightly different. That's somebody who's testing an editor, isn't it? Whereas this was just seeing whether they're actually reviewing articles or not, I suppose.
Yeah. The thing about SoCal is, I think the journal he was publishing was a real, well, it was used by serious people.
Yes.
That way. Whereas this one is made up.
Yes.
Effectively. And the editors of the SoCal one seem to believe that they could ignore the quantum mechanics bit nonsense, and they thought it was just someone trying to do some cross interdisciplinary stuff, and they felt the postmodern content of it was sufficient. But this maths one has got no content in it whatsoever. There's just simply no meaning there.
Yes. So is Katie joining us?
I don't know. Have you just seen she's online?
She's online.
Oh, excellent. How do I... can I drag her into a call? Technical issues, listeners. This might yes. happen, this might not.
Just imagine you hold music for a moment.
Oh, that'll be why my phone just went buzz as well.
Oh, I see. Right.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Hello, Katie.
I'm here now.
Right.
The whole team
The whole team is together. Katie, why are you so late?
I don't know. I've just got home from the airport, so...
Yes, that's what I was looking for. So you're freshly home from Dublin?
Yes, yeah. I've been in Ireland all week. I've basically been to all of Ireland. That's probably not quite true. I know there were people there who did a lot more travelling than I did, but I've been to several different places in Ireland and talked at several different ages of kids. And now my voice is pretty much ready to give up. You might be able to hear that. I've got a sore throat, a bit of a flu-y thing. You know, it was starting last weekend, and I thought, you know what, we'll sort that out. Do 4 talks a day for a week. And then go out drinking every night with all the Maths Week guys. So that's what's happened to me, basically. I'm just a bit wrecked now. So I've got most of next week to recover, and then it's Domino Computer immediately next weekend. So.
Cool. Right, so we've talked advances in pure nonsense, and I think the next thing to talk about is Robert Schneider interview that Samuel Hansen did for the site. So Samuel has a podcast called Relatively Prime, which he funded through a Kickstarter quite famously, so you might have heard of it, which is doing very well, and you should go to relprime.com and check it out. But for the second episode of this, he did Maths and Music. It was an episode called The Score. And he did an interview with Robert Schneider, who Samuel refers to as a mathematical musician / musical mathematician. Rob Schneider was one of the founding members of the indie band Apples in Stereo, of whom I have not heard particularly, but apparently they're well known. Yes, possibly. Yes. And he basically talks in this article about sort of mathematically inspired music, doesn't he?
Yeah, you sort of. I was worried before I started reading that he was just like people get, well, like golden ratio stuff. People get some core of a mathematical idea, but don't understand it in any mathematical sense, and just go fiddling with stuff. But it looks like he's picked the right concept for the job and done some, had an aim in mind.
Yeah.
And yeah, the music's fun. I like it. I like the Appleson stereo.
Cool.
So yeah, the interview was very was interesting, but the relatively prime episode is really what you want to listen to for the whole deal.
Yes. Great. Next on the list here is the MTT2K. Do you want to tell us about that, Chris?
Yeah, I think this stands for Mystery Teacher Theatre 2000, which is a pun or a rip-off of something of Mystery Science Theatre 2000, which is something that I also don't know about, but I think all Americans will know. They sit in front of films and mock them. So what some teachers did was they sat in front of some Khan Academy videos and just ripped into them, basically, in a constructive way, because they want Khan Academy to be better. So this video sort of went viral or whatever, and that ended up with Khan Academy saying, yeah, this is a really good idea. They like criticism, which is very enlightened of them. And then there was this prize to produce the best video of this sort critiquing Khan Academy. And the one that won, I found really interesting. It's been so long since I watched it, I've forgotten what it was about. But the title is "What If Khan Academy Was Made in Japan?" And he just goes through a Khan Academy video. I think he's something to do with probability, and then cutting to how he would teach that concept. And it's really interesting.
Cool. Yeah. Okay, and next on my list I have this blog post, CERDs, What Are They Good For? Which is a post I wrote on my Travels in the Mathematical World, which is a column of the AP article, although currently it's on a different site because I'm useless and haven't transferred it.
Because of the unique way the AP article is organised.
That's right, absolutely, yes, the unique way. I was asked this question, which is, why is rearranging equations containing square roots on the curriculum for GCSE, and what might it be useful for in later life? So there's this sort of question.
I do that all the time. I'm constantly. No, wait, hang on.
Yes. So this sort of question bugs me a bit, because it automatically sets off that alarm bell of, it has to be useful if it's going to be on the school curriculum, and that's not necessarily the case. But it sort of has to be useful or inspire some understanding of the beauty of mathematics or something, if you're going to justify to a 14-year-old why they have to study that topic. And I mean, CERDS is one of those things that I sort of think, oh yeah, no, I can't really remember what that is. It's this, and just because it's one of these things that you do in school, and then it doesn't really come up anymore. And it's sort of, well, I say in the blog post, it's sort of the business of noticing the square root of 12 times the square root of 3 can be combined to give the square root of 36, which simplifies to 6 very easily without mucking about. So it's kind of simplifying roots, I suppose. And I would say that's just part of general algebraic fluency, that you're, you know, that it's one of the ways that you learn to shuffle symbols around a page. And I don't know, but it has its own name at school, and therefore you sort of get asked to justify why you need to do it, I suppose.
Yeah.
I got a couple of slightly sarcastic answers on Twitter. So Drew, who's 23 on Twitter, said, why, for all the budding mathematicians in waiting, of course, suggesting that you'd teach it to every 14-year-old in the country on the basis that some of them are going to become mathematicians. And Will Davis, who's not only a hat rack, said, my simplistic answer would be when teaching it, which is also very good. Why do you need to learn this? Well, you'll need it when you have to teach it to children in 10 years' time or 20 years' time.
Actually, I think it's another type of rearranging things algebraically, and that, I mean, it's just such a nice applicable skill to be able to take a set of objects and rearrange them in your mind, and work out, you know, see that some of them drop out and stuff. You'll use that in so many different contexts without realizing it.
Yeah, I suppose it's like asking what's the point in the decimal point or something like that. It's just, it's a bit of notation that makes doing maths a bit easier.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, it's the thing about why is it this special topic that's getting taught on equations. I mean, it's like It's like as though you were teaching, noticing that the same thing appears on the top and bottom of a fraction and cancelling them out.
Would you believe that is actually a topic on the GCSE syllabus?
Is it? Is it given its own name and all that? I mean, that's the sort of...
It's the fact that you've named it that makes people
say, why do I need it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly, powers of 10 is a thing in the same list.
Yes, I suppose so. But people try to justify this. So Ian Robinson said it's about rounding errors for engineering, and Colin Beveridge said about computing roots is expensive. And I can sort of believe this because I spoke to a guy once who did programming of flight computers for aeroplanes, and there you've basically got no power because you've got no kit, you've got no computing power, so you need to make the equations as simple as possible. And if you can combine roots, that's nice. But the question is, are there going to be these really nice roots in an engineering context that nicely combine in this way? And Christian, you said anything involving rectangles, and particularly carpentry and landscaping.
I'm sure I would use SIRDS if I was doing a bit of carpentry, but maybe the average carpenter wouldn't.
Yes. Well, John Reed said he doesn't think anyone doing practical work would need the accuracy. And I mean, John's... is an engineer and does this, he's some sort of, he's a structural engineer, I think. So he's sort of, he would know more than I would have thought. And
I've got a thing about this, actually. A student came into Maths Aid this week with he's a first year engineer, and he's just got a problem sheet on some mechanical linkage. And we ended up, he used SIRDS there. And this student was good. And he said, I'm going to keep this as SIRDS the whole way through. But the worked solution he had from the lecturer, he rounded off to 4 sig figs each step.
Right.
We were 40 centimetres out by the end. which, this linkage was about 2 metres long. So that's why you use SIRDS.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, it'll come up in printing as well. Paper ratios are all SIRDS.
Yes. My uncle's a printer. He might know that.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway, so you'll look at my blog post, but different people came up with different things, and
yeah.
I don't know. I didn't come away with the feeling that anyone had massively convinced me. And we ended up back at teaching again because, people said it is useful for very specific things, and then John said, but why not teach it as simplifying equations? Why do you have to call it SIRDS? And I can see what he means, because if you give it a name, that means that then people will say, why have I had to learn this named thing? Whereas if you just did, here's another part of how to simplify equations, it wouldn't necessarily, you'd say, why do I need to simplify equations? And that's a lot more justifiable, I think, than something specific. But anyway, I don't know. You get into this whole what should be on the GCSE syllabus thing and it never ends. So I think we should move on. The last thing I thought we might talk about is, Katie, this post, Calculus of the Nervous System.
Yeah, I had a nice little interview. I did a phone interview with this composer, which turned out to make this really nice little interviewee article thing. And I've done in-person interviews before, but I've not done a phone interview. And there was just me frantically writing stuff down while she was talking about what she was saying. But it was a really interesting story that she's done some compositions using maths. So there's a person with a maths degree. Who's also been into composition her whole life, and she's become a professional composer, but she uses kind of mathematical ideas to inspire the music that she's writing. And I think maybe Christian, maybe some other people would like a bit more detail about exactly how that works. But if I'm honest, I guess it's quite complicated to talk about on the phone, so I didn't get that much detail about it. But things like, when you have a decision to make about like the spacing of the notes or what note to play next, to use things like random number generators or to use the solutions to equations or digits of constants and things like that to make those decisions for you. And obviously, if it sounds rubbish, reject it, but kind of give yourself a steer in a direction using kind of bits of maths. And it was nice because she was doing this composition about Ada Lovelace and about her quote. Her quote, to try and find the calculus of the nervous system, to try and analyse psychology and how the brain works using mathematical concepts. And she's written this composition that sort of takes that in, and it gets a bit dreamy and it's weird in places. And it's sort of supposed to model the idea of going into the nervous system and how that I guess. But yeah, it was a really interesting chat that we had, and I've done this little piece about it. I think it's not necessarily possible to find the actual performance from the proms on the internet, which is a shame. They should probably put that on iPlayer or something, but they've not.
Well, it was on iPlayer very briefly.
Week after the actual prom.
Yeah.
It will be performed again in future, so like probably on her website is the best place to find out about that. But I said, because we're both based in Manchester, she'd like to again and talk to me about topology and see if she can get some topology in to her next composition. So I'll have to somehow kind of give her some topology insight to try and use. But that should be interesting.
Yeah, cool.
So I'd just like to say well done to her PR person for thinking that an interview with a small-scale maths news website would help her chances at all.
No, it was an interesting email. It was like, you know, you should do an interview with this person. And we're thinking, oh, well, yeah, maybe, okay, yeah.
We should mention that we've been getting a few of these lately. It's quite fun.
We have had a few, and some of them are a lot more... we don't want to respond to them than others, but it's nice that people are thinking of us, I suppose.
It's worked out that if they send us an email that sort of sounds like we're a proper journalistic website, we'll be like, oh, well, of course, yes, because we're so by
it. I'm sure there are entire PR workshops on how to flatter bloggers.
Yes.
Yeah. But I think, yeah, we'll have an eye on what we think will actually be interesting for people. And also the ones that come through with, we notice you write a lot about X subject, and we think you'd be interested in this. Please give me a call. I'm in America. And it's like, well, first of all, you haven't checked where we are. And second of all, that word doesn't occur anywhere on our website.
Yes. Yes. And also, all you spam bots out there, you can stop commenting on the site as well. Right. So, talking about things that excite bloggers, we have a new look over on the site.
It excites this blogger.
I'm pretty excited by it as well.
So what's the deal?
I'll talk about this because I did it. You might know from seeing talks at university or from ever using LaTeX that it has a very particular set of fonts, which quite a lot of the reason LaTeX took off so well is that the original fonts used with it were of such a high quality. So I discovered recently that they're available in Unicode form, which means we can use them on the web. So I switched the aperiodical over to use Computer Modern Bright for the normal text, which is the same as the Beamer font, if you've ever made slides with Beamer, and our headers are all Computer Modern Concrete. I've no idea where that name comes from. It doesn't look particularly concrete to me. But yeah, I really like it. Every time I go on the site now, it reminds me that I've done that, and I think, oh, that looks really nice.
I think it should be called Computer Modern Lovely, because that's what it is.
Ah,
really?
You should send an email in.
Yeah, when I first put them on, when the fonts first went on and I showed it to Paul, he said, is that the Beamer font? This brilliant cover. Yes!
It's like a little shibboleth for mathematicians. Like everyone looks on and goes, that's the Beamer font. You can
start. Yeah, I think that's right, because you're sort of, it looks fine as a font, so if you don't know, then you just go, oh, it's a font, it looks fine. But if you do know, you're sort of in this secret club and you go, wait a minute, I know that font. Yes.
That's precisely what we want, isn't it? I think that's exactly the reaction we're after.
Good. What else on that theme can we build in? I feel that should be...
We've already got embedded LaTeX. That's...
Yeah, that's cool.
And we've already got the embedded pun of aperiodical, I suppose.
We might be doing enough, actually.
Yes. Well, we've sort of awoken from our summer slump, haven't we?
Mm. It's almost winter now, so this news is quite late, but we only do these podcasts every month or two.
Yes. Yes. But I guess at the time you last recorded one, we'd sort of dropped off a bit because stuff stops happening quite so much and people go away and things. But now we're sort of a bit more revived and getting on with it again.
Yeah. And I typically get some kind of horrendous flu over the summer, which knocks me out for all of July. That's been the trend in recent years.
That's weird. I got mine at the start of term, but that's no mystery. I see more than 100 fridges a week.
So, I got that one as well.
About a week of term, I came down with something.
Yeah.
Awkward fun. Anyway, and so Christian, will you tell us about the roundup and the esoterica?
Oh yeah, because I've typically ended every single one of these podcasts saying, promising to write the next roundup in interesting esoterica. So I actually did it this month. Done one of each. The aperiodical roundup. I can't even remember what I put in it. It was all right. Oh yeah, a ternary calculating machine. That was quite interesting. I've been saving that up for a while. You should have a look at that. There's this whole alternate history story. What if the Russians had succeeded with their ternary calculators? And what else can we have a look? We can look at some mathematical stamps. There's an enormous collection of those. And a rather racist man in the 1930s went around New York cataloguing all of the eateries in a mathematical way with a lot of Greek letters and things, which is an interesting bit of history, if not something to base your visits to places on. And interesting esoterica, I collect up papers. Peter, have you died?
No, I'm here.
I just heard something go thump.
Oh, right.
Bored you to death.
Sorry, I'm still alive as well.
Okay.
It's good that we're all still
it's
alive.
Just a bad flu. It's not, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so interesting esoterica. I've collected some things. We've got another This Is Turing complete result. We've got another This Is NP complete result. But we've also got some interesting things in there.
That's nicely worded. Yep.
Yep, so that's that.
Good. Yep. And Katie, you have a monthly feature as well.
I do, yes. We launched another puzzle bomb. And this is around about, in fact, this is actually always the time of the month where I go, oh no, I need to make another puzzle bomb. but actually this month I'm mildly prepared, so I've got at least one thing already. And in fact, this is a really interesting pre-fact that maybe only, this is an exclusive, I'm going to say, to listeners of the Aperiodcast. I'm going to make sure that the December puzzle bomb is ready in time for the MassCham conference. Right, which is like a whole 2 weeks early, and I'm going to bring it along so that I'm going to have all 12 of this year's puzzle bombs at the Mass Jam conference. So it'll be a sneak preview to anyone who's there IRL in real life. You'll actually get to see it a couple of weeks away. So that means I've got to write some puzzle bombs in the next few weeks, but that's fine because the Christmas one's going to be brilliant.
Cool. So Sam and I recorded the Math podcast just now, and I totally didn't realise that the Domino's thing was next weekend. But will you just tell people what that is in case they want to come along?
Yeah, well, we're in Manchester at the Manchester Science Festival. Matt Parker, Professor Matt Parks, Professor Sir Matt Parks was awarded Science Communicator in Residence for his innovative science communication techniques, which means that he's required to put on an event there. So he decided to do this domino computer, which you've probably heard far too much about now. But essentially, we've got 10,000 dominoes and approximately 8 hours to produce an adder that will do a three-digit binary adding calculation. And if we can succeed in doing that without the whole thing falling over early, then it will be very exciting at the Museum of Science and Industry on both Saturday and Sunday next weekend.
It's just occurred to me, you might set a world record for lowest information density.
Impressive. I'll be able to add up numbers as big as 7. Using an entire room full of dominoes.
If all goes well, yeah.
Yeah, if all goes completely well. So we did a little bit of testing this morning, because I was on my way back from Ireland, but some of the team that are going to be there next weekend did a little bit of testing, and we've managed to refine the junction between two chains of dominoes. We've got like a very definite design for that junction, because it's very important that it goes one way and doesn't fall back and knock the other dominoes over. So they've got like a very sturdy design for that, which we can repeat because we've got a stencil now. So hopefully that's going to be good. And we're also going to have loads of cameras on it. We're going to have people filming. We may even have a time-lapse film of it as well. And of course, people there on the day, and we'll have loads of little activities about how to make different logic gates out of dominoes. For people to play with while they watch us curse and swear as we knock over sub-chains of the big thing. and hopefully get that whole thing done in time for, I think, 3 o'clock we're going to launch. So we'll be there from early in the morning, but 3 o'clock is the sort of launch time for both days. And that's when Matt's going to stand up and explain what the heck is going on. And then we'll do a thing, like we'll pick some numbers up to 7 and add them together. I mean, there's like a 1 in 14 chance of getting it right anyway, right?
And there's no chance of you pulling a Felix Baumgartner and calling it off due to bad weather?
No, we're indoors. We're indoors.
Oh, well.
So we're actually directly in front of the Manchester Baby.
Yes, that's very cool.
We're basically right next to it, and we can go over to it and point at the tiny section of it that we are replicating in the form of dominoes.
You should point out that the Manchester Baby is a computer and not a baby, as I thought for a few seconds.
It was Alan Turing's thing that he did, some kind of Alan Turing thing, and because it's Alan Turing here, they've got it there with a big display, so that's also there to look at. If us crawling around with our hands and knees and swearing is too boring. We all have T-shirts. We've all got team T-shirts that say Domino Computer Builder on the back. That was thought through, because we'll just be on our hands and knees.
No one will see it different, yeah.
No, on the front, it should say, it's not working.
Yeah, please don't knock anything over. We're actually terrified of small children running through the thing and just destroying everything.
And giant babies, presumably.
Yeah, well, yeah, the Manchester Baby just comes stomping through. That would be... we're just going to have to be very vigilant of small kids getting excited and jumping up and down. It's like a concrete floor, so we shouldn't be too... But I think when we were doing some testing last time, somebody dropped like an iron girder or some kind of lighting rig that they were carrying nearby, and that did knock over some dominoes. And we just turned around and gave this guy an absolute glare in the face. But it wasn't, we weren't doing anything proper. We were just messing around to check the floor surface and everything. But hopefully, like, even people jumping up and down won't be able to necessarily cause any disasters. But, you know, it'll be fun. It's a fun challenge, you know.
So yes, you're worried about people sort of coming around the corner and going, oh my goodness, this is so exciting, and starting to jump up and down as a result. Right, so if people want to get in touch with us, Christian, what do they do?
They send an email into root@aperiodical.com, or they tweet us at aperiodical, or meet one of us in person. That's a good way. Messages in a bottle, lasers beamed into space are bad ways.
There's a pigeon on the top of my building. That's a lie.
It doesn't have a message attached to it, does it? No. root@aperiodical.com if you've what are the reasons? Seen something good, or you want to write for the site? We're very keen on other people taking the workload off us.
Ideas for ways we can nerd it up some more.
Yeah, please.
It was good this week. Alistair Bird got in touch and said, I want to write a news story about the fact that one of the people who won the Nobel Memorial Prize for Economics claims to be a mathematician, and so he wrote that for us, didn't he?
Yeah, good. I think he was quite annoyed that we hadn't written it up.
Right, yeah.
That's exactly the attitude we need.
Yes,
absolutely.
Pedants, please. Everything.
And I see here that the next Carnival of Mathematics 92, the submission deadline is the 1st of November.
Yes, we're hoping to get back onto the first of the month track after our disastrous, extremely delayed September and slightly delayed October. We're back on for the 1st of November. And incidentally, if anyone does want to host a future carnival, we're gradually approaching the end of our current list of signed up people. I think the next one we need is probably March. So if anyone feels as though they may be able to spare a couple of hours around about the end of March, then, you know, get in touch, email us as previously mentioned, and let us know, because I can happily put you on the list of hosts. And it really doesn't take that much. You just have to read through the submissions and assemble them into a legible document.
Yes, and I'll support that with the message, go on, March is ages away.
Yes,
very good. All right, so
far in advance to actually have to worry about them. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. And it'll not actually happen, don't worry. It's ages away. Yeah.
That's how you got me as well. You signed me up 6 months in advance. Then I was on holiday when I needed to do it.
Yes, well, don't go on holiday, but that's a good piece of advice. Don't go on holiday when you're due to do it. But no, it's really not that bad. You get sort of, I don't know, a dozen or more blog posts sent in, and you sort of read through them and pick the ones you like and make a little blog post for your site. And it's quite a nice thing to do. It's quite nice sort of keeping in touch with what's going on, what people are blogging, isn't it? So.
Yeah, get you some nice traffic as well.
Yes. Okay. Right, good to talk to you both.
Yes, yep. We've done very well on a 9 to 12 minute podcast this time around.
I was saying before we started, I really want to get this done quickly because I've got to go and have my tea, and we just haven't at all.
So let's end now. Let's okay. Forget about the listeners. We don't care about you. We've got stuff to do. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.